Sairam, dear listeners, we do hope you're enjoying our live broadcast from our studios. In the morning glory segment, you heard the conversation with Mr. Henry Tan from Singapore as part of our Learning with Love series. If you happen to miss it, you can download the Morning Glory segment and listen to that interesting and insightful conversation. Dear listeners, it is time now for the musing segment with Professor G. Venkatraman. We're going to play for you an episode from the popular question and answer series where Professor Venkatraman discussed a few listeners' questions. We do hope you will enjoy this episode too and find it useful. Over now for Professor G. Venkatraman, where he handles a few interesting spiritual questions from our listeners.
Long Sairam and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam. Before I begin, I must mention, as I have done earlier, that I am not sure that the questions as presented to me are exactly as they were posed, or I have been slightly edited to make them a bit clear. Often, people ask questions that are somewhat imprecise because of the confusions they have. This is not to be sneered at, and I would certainly not complain about it. What I am trying to say is that while during an actual talk when questions are often asked, I can seek clarification from the questioner or ask someone else to help me and restate the question in a manner that I can understand. I cannot do so here. All I can do is to try and handle the question as it is given to me in the best possible manner. With that introduction, let me consider the questions put up for this broadcast. Unlike earlier, I shall take one question at a time because the questions are so diverse. The first question is the following: why did God create living beings? I believe Swami himself has answered this question. In fact, I do not know if anyone has answered this question before Swami did. And in case anyone has, I am almost certain that they could not have given such a beautiful answer as Swami has given. Basically, Swami's answer goes as follows. God is love, pure love in fact. When there is no creation, there is only God, and that too in the formless aspect. Embedded in this formless aspect of God is love, but it remains in abstraction. Let us say there's a rose plant. I am sure you will agree that it is when the rose flower actually blooms that one appreciates how wonderful that plant is, giving us, as it does, the pleasure that the rose offers, not only via its beauty but also its fragrance. Swami says in the same way, God created the universe to serve as a platform for love to manifest in a practical form. In other words, the universe is like the rose plant that is yet to bloom. And that is my first point. Okay, so there is this universe. What about the living beings? That really is what the question is all about. Consider the statement of Swami wherein he says, I separated myself from myself in order to love myself. That might sound like a very mysterious statement, but what Swami means is that when he created living beings, he embedded pure love into each one of them, so that through their various actions, these beings could show love to each other. That was one way of using the universe as a stage in which God's love story is played out. There are, in fact, many examples of love in action in the living world. Consider, for example, the way a tigress fiercely protects its cubs. I'm sure you all know about that. That is a manifestation of divine love playing out between the mother tiger and her cubs. Maybe neither the mother nor her children are aware of it, but we are we not? Next, consider a bird feeding its young ones. I am sure you have seen, as I have, photographs of such a scene. Just consider the great distance that the older bird sometimes flies to collect all the food, and coming back to the nest feeds the young ones. That again is what the manifestation of love means in practice. And by the way, when these young birds grow up, are they going to care for their mom and pop? By no means. So in this case, the parent is actually sacrificing, although it might not be aware of it. Please remember that love without sacrifice is meaningless, and that sacrifice without love is impossible. Moving on, there are amazing photos of animals of one species giving milk to the baby of some other species. This is not common, I agree, but I am sure you have seen such pictures, as I have. And then there is the way dogs love their masters. So, where non-human living beings are concerned, I think I have cited enough examples of how love plays out in this universe. To recap what I have said thus far, God first created the universe as a stage, and on this stage He put living beings so that by loving each other, they could transform love from an abstract concept to something that is meaningful and manifest so that we can all see it. Okay, let me move on and now consider humans, where things change on a huge scale. Why? That's because humans are not only conscious beings but have reasoning power, which allows them, among other things, to look beyond the world of mere sense perception. What I mean is that humans can look within, recognize the presence of conscience, understand the difference between good and bad, understand that creation came from a creator, and so on. In other words, humans are way above other living beings and other species. Humans not only have enormous reasoning and creative powers, but more than any other species, are able to exhibit to an amazing extent feelings of compassion and love. Moreover, they are able to recognize that such virtues spring from the soul or the Atma within. As Swami sometimes says, there was no one to know who I was, and so I created humans and blessed them with a superior sense of awareness, enabling them to recognize that behind creation there is a creator, who is always full of pure love. Does it all stop merely with humans finding out that God exists? No, one has to go much further. In what way? In two ways. Firstly, one must see God everywhere, in everything, all the time. Next, one must react to this omnipresence in the manner God expects us to. And what does God expect of us? To love all beings and to serve all beings, at least to the extent we can. In short, when we love each other as we are expected to, we would be making Swami's statement about He loving Himself via various beings come true. I hope all that is clear. The next question in my bag for today is, during Pralaya, if everything gets destroyed, where would God be? Would He also be destroyed? Frankly, I am a bit surprised by this question. By the way, Pralaya means dissolution of the universe. Anyway, let me try and answer this question since it has been posed to us. The first and the most important thing we must remember is that God is eternal, which means that He always is. He has no beginning or end. So, there is no question of God ceasing to be, even when the universe is dissolved. The word Pralaya refers to the dissolution of the universe, as I just explained. And from what I also said just now, it should be clear that God continues to exist even after Pralaya or the dissolution of the universe. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes all this very clear to Arjuna. He says that He always exists in a formless aspect. Vedanta refers to this aspect as Nirakara Brahman, or God without form. God in this formless aspect is pure consciousness, which is totally non-material. Therefore, God as pure consciousness does not require any material universe for Him to exist. However, while existing in this formless aspect, God can, if He so chooses, create a universe, and He does do this sometimes. Once he creates a universe, God then fills it with both inanimate and animate beings. At that time, God has two presences, one as Nirakara Brahman and another as God, who is immanent in the entities that are created in the universe. Of course, when we see the sun or the ocean or even a peacock, we see only the entities as such. However, as I just pointed out, God is immanent in these entities, and that is why the sun is so full of energy, that is why the ocean is so powerful, and that is why this peacock is so beautiful. It's all because God is present, hiding inside. Once many years ago, when Swami was with students in Thrai Vrindavan, someone described how Swami appeared in America, or was it Canada, I don't remember. Anyway, Swami appeared there in a faraway country and saved a person there from a real difficult problem. We all listened with our jaws dropping. After this exciting narration was over, one of those present asked, "Swami, how could you be present in two places at the same time? That is to say, here in Bangalore and there in America." Swami gave a wry smile and replied, "You people seem to have a dim opinion about God's power. Somebody speaks in Washington and you are able to see that person in your drawing room. If man can do these things, is it not possible for God, who is infinitely powerful, to be in two places at the same time? Think about it." Now, to get back to the question I was dealing with and complete the answer, God always exists as the formless God or Nirakara Brahman, whether there is a universe or not. So even after Pralaya, God would continue to exist as Nirakara Brahman. There is no change in that status. However, one aspect does change when the universe is created. While the universe exists, God hides himself in the various entities. This is what I refer to as the immanence of God in things created. When the universe dissolves and the various entities disappear, God also withdraws himself into the formless aspect totally, which, as I told you, always exists. In other words, while the universe exists, God has two presences simultaneously. When God dissolves the universe, God shuts down one of these presences while maintaining the other aspect, the formless aspect, that is. I hope you follow what I mean. A change of topic once again. And the next question is all about transformation. This question actually has many parts, and they are as follows. 1. Are there any stages in the process of transformation? 2. How do we know we are making progress, and is there any method of measuring this progress? 3. How does one know that one has transformed? Let us start with the question whether there are any stages in the process of transformation. I would like to begin my answer by discussing first what I believe is the real meaning of the word spiritual transformation. There are many ways of doing this discussion, all equivalent, of course. One way would be to say transformation is a process that makes us pure. Another would be to say transformation is a process of overcoming our spiritual ignorance, and so on. I personally think that perhaps the most useful definition would be to state that transformation is a process whereby we give up body consciousness, or dehabhimanam, as Swami refers to it. And after giving up dehabhimanam or body consciousness, we acquire in its place atmabhimanam, or the awareness that far from being the body or the ego self, we are in fact the atma. So in short, transformation means giving up one thing and acquiring another. What do we give up? We give up the feeling I am the body. And what do we acquire? We acquire the feeling I am the atma. I hope you can remember that. Swami has explained all this many, many times, and I too have spoken about it in some of my talks. However, for the sake of completeness, I guess I have to make some comments here. In a way, it all goes back to the famous question, who am I? I am sure you have heard Swami raise this question many times. With regard to this question, which is all about one's true identity, each of us has two options. Either we identify our personality with what is variously called the ego self or the lower self, or else we identify our personality with the Atma. The mind is the agency that makes the choice and seals the fate, seals our fate. Let me consider for a moment the situation when a person thinks he is the body. This identification or body consciousness results when we become attached too much to the body. Let's say there is a Mr. Smith. As Swami has told us many times, Mr. Smith, Smith is the name that comes from the family into which this gentleman is born. It is the name given by his parents. In short, it is something connected with the body. Yet, this name is important in the context of worldly affairs, and that is the reason why most people identify themselves with the body. This happens because the mind is excessively focused on the external world. However, where God is concerned, He is not going to be bothered whether X is Smith or John or whatever it is. He is only concerned about the virtuous qualities that this person excels. In other words, where spirituality is concerned, what really matters is to what extent is one able to identify oneself with the Atma as compared to the body. To put it differently, the mind must look more inside than becoming absorbed with the external world. Now you might wonder, what on earth does it mean to identify oneself with the Atma? This is not only difficult but almost seems like a meaningless proposition. Is it really meaningless? Let us examine by going back to Mr. Smith and imagine that someone insults him. Now, if Smith is like most of us, he would immediately get hot under the collar the moment the insults are hurled. There is nothing unusual about this, and in fact this is the reaction one would normally expect. All this is true, no doubt. But we must at the same time realize that all this happens entirely on account of body consciousness or ego. Let us now suppose that Mr. Smith takes a different approach and says, so and so is trying to insult me. But he is not insulting me, rather he is insulting the body that I wear. Since I am not the body, I really need not pay any attention to what is being said. I know what most of you would do. You would shake your heads and say, this is ridiculous. Who would ever shrug off an insult in that unrealistic manner? It is meaningless and irrelevant. And so on your comments would go. Well, just because we are used to doing something, that does not make it right. For example, in India, hardly any car driver ever observes the road rules. In fact, I believe most drivers do not even know that road rules exist. I am not making this up, for I have seen even police officers here parking vehicles in full violation of all parking rules, which by the way do exist. The point I am making is, just because we all tend to do something, it does not necessarily mean that what we are doing is correct. Putting all this together, whether we like it or not, just because most people behave that way, having body consciousness or dehabhimanam or attachment to the ego self is not the right thing to do. Instead, we should progressively shed this body consciousness and move towards atmabhimanam. Many a time people tell me, come on, be realistic. This is simply not possible. I would say that before we make such assertive statements, why don't we try something simple? Let us say you leave your room and go out for darshan. At the gate of the building in which you are staying, the sevadar greets you and says, Sai Ram. You smile and reply, Sai Ram. This is what happens all the time, almost in a routine manner. However, suppose, that after you greet the sevadar, you tell yourself, Swami, I am grateful to you for starting my day with a nice smile and a greeting. By this means, you are essentially trying to see Swami in the Sevadal. You go to the mandir and get seated, and as you do, someone offers you a cushion to sit on. You smile and thank that person. Once more you tell yourself, Swami, how nice of you to come in that form and give me a cushion. You sure want me to be comfortable, don't you? No wonder you are hailed as the most compassionate one. Suppose you go through the day in this manner, adding every time a divine layer over routine experiences. Supposing you do that, I guarantee you that suddenly life for you would become very different. Not in any spectacular way, but in the ability to make Swami come alive and be a part of every little thing you do. Thus, starting in a simple manner, we can become increasingly Swami conscious, seeing Him and associating Him with every little thing that happens to us. If we are determined to see Him all the time, we achieve what Swami refers to as constant integrated awareness. Constant integrated awareness, CIA. Not the CIA we all know, but different one. Spiritual. In simple terms, this is how, that is to say via CIA, this is how we can move away from Dehabhimanam towards Atmabhimanam. Believe me, when we attempt this transformation, Swami responds generously, quietly making His support and presence evident all the time. I am not joking. I have actually tried this and found it to be quite effective. I assure you that there are definite fallouts and benefits. Firstly, one learns to smile more often. Next, our smile begets a smile, and we find that people tend to be more friendly and positive towards us. This quietly but most definitely reduces the number of friction points. Otherwise, there are any number of occurrences in these days of high tension that could trigger us and cause us to flare up. More than anything, I soon found that often when I was stuck in a task and did not know how to proceed, someone would come from somewhere with some kind of help that enabled me to overcome the problem. I honestly tell you that this sort of thing happens all the time in our studio. Not only to me, but indeed to all the boys. But for this mysterious assistance that regularly shows up literally from nowhere, we would not be able to do one-tenth of what we are now able to offer you by way of service. In short, moving from a state in which we are totally gripped by body consciousness to one where we feel one with others, at least to some extent, is possible. This transition is accomplished by trying to see the other person as Swami in disguise. At start, this might sound like a make-believe game and pretty childish. But when this becomes a habit, your perspective does change, and slowly, a very positive personality change always occurs. Thus far, I have been focusing mainly on explaining what exactly the word transformation means and a broad approach for achieving this transformation. Basically, it calls for a change of perspective, shifting one's attention from one's own ego to the omnipresent divinity. Let me now proceed to the next part of the question, which is whether there are any stages in such a transformation process. I personally believe there are, and according to me, the common sense approach would be to first try and get rid of the negativity within us, replacing it with positivity or positivism. According to me, that would be the very first stage. Let me explain. Let us say there's a person who is prone to get angry rather quickly. This person, let us suppose, is also obese or fat and further quite lazy. All these three qualities are totally undesirable. We all agree on that. In my opinion, the very first thing this person ought to do is to try and get rid of the tendency to get angry for everything and anything. This would help greatly in calming the mind. The mind is very important for the body, and unless the mind becomes calm, it would not be amenable to discipline. Okay, we assume the mind has been calm to some extent. What next? Well, the person must immediately follow up with some control over eating and take seriously to exercise. This clearly would lead to a reduction in weight. By this time, the mind is not only under reasonable control, but through discipline, the body too has been brought around to some extent at least towards normal. In turn, this would help to get rid of laziness also. All this is a part of what I would call stage A, where negative aspects are brought under control and progressively diminished. Simultaneously, the positive aspects must also be seeded and nurtured as carefully as possible. What do I mean by that? Simple. First, one takes to Namasmaranam or chanting the name very seriously. No matter what particular path of spiritual development one adopts, I believe that Namasmaranam is a must. It's like breathing. Can we ever stop breathing? I hope you recall how much stress Swami lays on chanting the name. Okay, what else apart from Namasmaranam? Well, there are many simple things one could and should start on. One could move around with a genuine smile on one's face, not for advertising oneself, but to fill people with some confidence that you are a good and peaceful person. That smile is a signal in itself, and people might approach you with requests for help or assistance. In other words, helping and not hurting is a positive activity and attitude that must be cultivated. Using one's time fruitfully to do good rather than on totally unproductive things would be another positive activity. Reading the scriptures intensely, not for creating a record in page turning, but for absorbing good advice, would be an extremely useful activity. For example, the Bible has so many wonderful parables. If one reads them over and over again, one would get a deeper understanding of the message of Christ. Similarly, if one reads the Ramayana carefully, and I mean carefully, one's understanding of how best to adhere to Satya and Dharma would get consolidated. Reading the lives of great men and women from Gandhi to Mother Teresa and absorbing their experiences would also be another example of using time properly. In short, positive activity is all about using time in a manner pleasing to God. As Swami says, time waste is life waste. Conversely, time spent on improving one's positive aspects is life put to proper use. In summary, transformation is all about making our lives God-centered, which calls for a shift in focus from the external world to the indweller. Shift in focus means that every time we do something, we should ask, is this a good thing to do? Is it a proper way of spending time, or would it be a waste of time? Will what I am doing benefit others in any way at all and bring at least some joy to them? Finally, would Swami approve of what I am trying to do and be pleased with it? Transformation is all about ensuring that the answer to all such questions is a resounding yes. There are two small tales to all this, the first of which is, how do we know we are making progress? I personally believe the best way of assessing progress is to conduct at the end of every day an honest personal audit. Before we go to sleep, we should sit in the bed and carefully reflect on all that was done during the day, and then separate all the actions into two major categories, negative and positive. Maybe we could then give a rating to each activity, whether positive or negative, a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. Total up all the negatives and positives and see what the scoreboard looks like. After that, one must plan the corrective steps that are required. Now, all this is an analytical way of doing things that so-called experts like to explain with charts, graphs, equations and so on. I tell you, there's a much simpler method. Swami has given it for us. He says, start the day with God, spend the day with God, fill the day with God, and end the day with God. If you do that, no need for all this audit business and charts and graphs. Things would take care of themselves. You want to know how to be God-conscious non-stop? Well, tune into Radio Sai. We are on 24/7, And if, with internet we can be reached anywhere in the world, even in Antarctica. Not so difficult, is it? I think I have said enough for today and shall stop here. Thanks for listening. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listener. You were listening to a special musings talk by Professor G. Venkatraman, the former Vice Chancellor of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. This was episode 241 in the musings series and was recorded on the 9th of September 2013. Your feedback is valuable to us and you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.
Thank you. జనుగారి ఎదుటి తప్పుల బాబా ఎంగలేడు కల్లకపటాలు తెలియని అందరి వాడు ఎల్ల జీవుల ధనవలే
ఢాక राम है स्वनाम धन्य, राम धन्य राम, राम को प्रणाम, राम रमैया घट घट वासी राम रमैया घट घट वासी सत्य कबीर वचन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन ओ मन रे कर तू ओ मन रे कर तू राम भजन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन
श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामा 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 श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामा
भजन कर